The universe of form all devouring the soldiers. Take it easy this evening. Reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the second chapter, entitled Contents of the Gita, summarized, text number 54. Arjuna Vacha Stita Pragyasya Kabasa Samadhisthasya Kesava Stitadikim Prabhaseta Kim Asita Vrajeta Kim. Good memories. Really good. Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak and what is his language? How does he sit and how does he walk? Purport. As there are symptoms for each and every man in terms of his particular situation, similarly, one who is in Krishna consciousness as his particular nature, talking, walking, thinking, feeling, etc., as a rich man has his symptoms by which he is known as a rich man, as a diseased man has his symptoms by which he is known as a diseased, or as a learned man has his symptoms, so a man in transcendental consciousness of Krishna has specific symptoms in various dealings. Yes. Now it's even too high. It's healthy. Various dealings. One can know his specific symptoms from the Bhagavad Gita. Most important is how the man in Krishna consciousness speaks, for speech is the most important quality of any man. It is said that a fool is undiscovered as long as he doesn't speak, and certainly a well-dressed fool cannot be identified unless he speaks, but as soon as he speaks, he reveals himself at once. The immediate symptom of a Krishna conscious person is that he speaks only of Krishna and of matters relating to him. Other symptoms then automatically follow, as stated below. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnanana Salakaya Chakshura Nilitam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namah Si Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Richaranda Sri Advaita Gadada Sri Vasade Gauravaktavrinna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the devotee is speaking about Krishna. And in this way, he is always engaged in positive activity. In this way, everything he does becomes meaningful. It's not empty filling of time. Like Prabhupada says, the babble of the sea waves, as ordinary men talk. Right? Just making noises, but simply filling time, but not really full of meaning. So, the life of a devotee is always full of meaning. And meaning because there is eternal credit. Neha vikramana sasti pratyavayana vichyati svalpamapi yasvidana shitayate maatubhayat. No loss, no demolition, but eternal spiritual benefit. Therefore, such discussions are very enlivening. They are, first of all, liberating us from material existence. Klesa agni subada. They destroy suffering. They make everything auspicious. But then in itself, these discussions about Krishna become the source of all pleasure, because Krishna is unlimited and so full of many wonderful varieties and qualities that the more we enter into discussing about Krishna, the more nice it is. Krishna Keshava. Keshava is referring to the appearance of Krishna. Kesha is referring to Krishna's hair, his bluish, blackish hair. The hair of Krishna is so overwhelming that it means a lot. Krishna even has a name, Keshava, relating to his hair. The name Keshava, of course, also relates to the pastime where he killed the Kesi demon. There he is also called Keshava. But talking about Krishna's hair, I'm thinking about Lord Chaitanya being no different from Krishna. And at the time when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he went to Katra. And in Katra, he ordered a barber to come to shave his hair. The barber absolutely refused. He refused. No way. Absolutely not possible. No. I cannot do this. I cannot be part of this. No question. No. But Lord Chaitanya not only ordered him, but somehow or other controlled him from within. And the barber, therefore, against his will, was shaving the hairs of the Supreme Lord. Why would the Supreme Lord have to shave his hair? So, nowadays, in Katra, in that place where Lord Chaitanya was shaved up for taking sannyas, his hair has been preserved in a samadhi. And next to that samadhi of the hair, there is the samadhi of the barber who shaved him. So it's quite a big thing. I'm sure they waited for the barber too when his time came. But still, it's quite something, right? There's the hair and there's the samadhi of the barber. So this can be found in Katra, in the place where Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. So how nice that Lord Chaitanya's hair is preserved like that. So this is the hair of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the most wonderful thing. So Keshava is extraordinarily beauty. Krishna's extraordinary beauty is so great that it can just absorb one completely. Just perceiving the beauty of Krishna is enough to forget everything else completely. It doesn't matter which aspect of Krishna's beauty, whether it is his nails, which are like mother of pearl, or his hair, or his lotus eyes, whatever may be. Perceiving the form of Krishna is so stunningly beautiful that it is absorbing. Even sometimes beauty in this world can overwhelm. It is said when Putana took the form of a beautiful young girl and she entered into Vrindavan, everyone was just stunned by her beauty, especially the men. Right? And they were most of the elder men, because the younger men had gone with Nanda Maharaj to pay the taxes in Mathura that day. But they were all shocked. They could hardly breathe just seeing that beauty. So, and what is any beauty compared to the beauty of Krishna? So, in this way, everything about Krishna is wonderful. When we speak about his beauty, when we speak about any of Krishna's qualities, when we speak about Krishna's intelligence, then we see that he uses his intelligence in different ways. Krishna can be very playful. He plays with words, he plays with his devotees, and yet Krishna can also be very grave and very serious, both simultaneous. That is very much the nature of Krishna. So in this way, when we understand the qualities of Krishna, then we begin to understand the mercy of Krishna. We say so many times, Krishna's mercy, it's all Krishna's mercy. What is Krishna's mercy? If someone would ask us, what is Krishna's mercy? We would say, well, Krishna's mercy, it means that we can go around and ask, actually. Let's hear. What is Krishna's mercy? Oh, camera, what is Krishna's mercy? Okay. Yes? Everybody's well-wisher. Suridam. Suridam sarvadehinam. Suridam means, ridam is the word heart, and suridam is magnifying it. So someone who is like very much in our heart. So in this way, his friendship is heartfelt friendship. I just heard it this morning when I turned on a lecture of Prabhupada. So I must have heard it to tell you, I guess. Yes. To sit here now is Krishna's mercy. Mm. Why? Temple is a spiritual world. Non different from Vrindavan. Non different from Navadvip, Mayapur. Holy name is there, Vaishnavas. So much mercy. More? Okay. that you came is also Krishna's mercy. I mean, that we got up from bed this morning is Krishna's mercy, if you know what I mean. And that I brushed my teeth today, it's Krishna's mercy. Yeah. We're so lucky that we have Krishna's mercy. Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, it goes a little too slow now. You can always count on. You think the gopis agree with that? No? Okay. Because Radharani told the bumblebee, you unreliable servant of an unreliable master. But still, Krishna could not stay away for long. Although, She couldn't see it. Still Krishna was always, always thinking of Srimati Radharani. Yes, we can rely on Krishna. Prabhupada said, and when Prabhupada said that Krishna is our best friend, he also said that Krishna is our best friend because Krishna, he can completely fulfill all our desires. He said, no one else can, but Krishna can. Right? Anyone of this world will disappoint us to some extent. But Krishna will never, because Krishna, he can completely fulfill any of our desires. There are no limits to what Krishna can do. If he wants to, he can do anything, right? And he does also. And he can also, in a very brilliant way, satisfy his devotee, like in the case of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva asked for the kingdom greater than his father and grandfather, which was not easy because his grandfather was Brahma. That basically meant the universe. So how do you do that? How do you give someone a kingdom greater than the universe? But Krishna had a great solution. Not only did he give, Dhruva was also interested in spiritual advancement. As Dhruva got the darshan of the Lord, Dhruva was no longer interested in the kingdom. He then only wanted just pure spiritual advancement. So now what? So how to fulfill his desires? But Krishna did it very expertly by making him in charge of a planet which was spiritual. It was bigger than the entire universe, and at the same time, he was also free from the material world. He was also on the spiritual plane. So everything was fulfilled in that. Which was more than anyone could have imagined. So Krishna's imagination goes beyond ours, and he uses that to fulfill all our desires. Therefore, ultimately, in devotional service, no one remains frustrated. In the material life, is said, is containing frustration. There is the pavarga, pa parisram, hard work, fena, foam, then ba vyartata, frustration. Bhayam, fear, and finally mritya, death, and that's then material existence. So frustration is always here in the material world, who gets his desires fulfilled. But with Krishna, one gets his desires more than fulfilled. So much fulfilled that that one is just overflowing. It's too much. It's not only that the heart is full, it's overflowing. It's too much happiness. That's what's happening to these devotees, and that's why we see they crash on the ground unconscious, because it's just too much happiness. It's not just how do you feel, are you happy? Nothing like, yes, I'm happy, and then just beaming. No, crashing to the ground. It's just too much happiness. That's really what is happening. The heart is just overflowing with ecstasy, because this is the mercy of Krishna, very abundant. Krishna, he gives in such enormous quantities. So this is very, very nice. So we must fill our time thinking about Krishna, remembering Krishna somehow or other. The three modes of material nature are also there. They don't always help us in this respect. The three modes of material nature, they are like the waves in the ocean of nescience. And the waves in the ocean of nescience sometimes are very peaceful, and sometimes there is a storm. And what can be said or done, that is not within our control. The events that happen in our life are sometimes very mild, and other times very strong. At mild times, then it seems so easy to be Krishna conscious. But when the motes are strong, then it can become a little difficult to think of Krishna and to not become so caught up in the events. But then at least we have Bhagavad Gita. Then we have Bhagavad Gita. It is because it is exactly there where Bhagavad Gita starts, when Arjuna was completely overwhelmed, when he was no longer in control of his mind, when his mind was reeling, when his bow was gliding from his hand, when emotions were overpowering him, when tears were running from his down his cheeks, and when Arjuna was just completely confused about what to do, at that point Bhagavad Gita begins. So therefore, when we become overwhelmed by the three modes of material nature, then we can take shelter of Bhagavad Gita, particularly. Of course, it is not that Bhagavad Gita is only preserved for those times, and that we take it off the shelf only when emergency. Emergency Bhagavad Gita in a little glass box on your wall, right? Break the glass and take out your Gita, like that. Every devotee house has one, just in case. Thank God. This is not for that purpose. The Bhagavad Gita is also relishable. Relishable by the liberated devotees, by the devotees who are not at all affected by the three modes of material nature. By those devotees that are in consciousness not affected by the three modes of material nature, they still appreciate every word of the Bhagavad Gita because, after all, these are the words of Krishna and are very, very deep and very brilliant, they are displaying in a very systematic way how different states of consciousness exist in people and what they can do to elevate themselves. For example, there is what they call the yoga ladder in the Bhagavad Gita. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga. We're seeing that engage our work. We're coming from the sensual platform. We begin to, we're used to enjoying the fruits of our labor. But Bhagavad Gita tells us no. Karmani eva vikarasti mahafalisu kadachana karma fadahi turbur. It is explaining to us that we should not enjoy the fruits of our activities. We have right to work, but not the right to enjoy the fruits. So that's revolutionary, very revolutionary. Take these fruits of our labor and offer them to Krishna. So that's a big, big change. But at the same time, it is connecting to somewhere where we are, because everyone is working very hard to enjoy the fruits of his labor. So Bhagavad Gita gives us a step, a next step to take here. Say, no, start offering these fruits to Krishna. Begin with that. Yeah? Start offering them to Krishna. And then we become purified and gradually begin to develop more and more interest in getting out of this material world and begin to see that actually material existence as a whole is not the enjoyable part of life. In the beginning, okay, we have to give up the fruits. It hurts a little, but then we get in the habit of giving to Krishna. And after a while, it gets nice. Yeah, it gets nice. So it feels good. I sponsored something for Rati Yatra, Jai Jagannath. And if you do, then if you sponsor something for Rati Yatra, then when you go to Rati Yatra that time, then it's a little different. It's different. It's like it becomes more meaningful. Suddenly you're at Rati Yatra and something about it. Yeah, it's just a bit more meaningful than just, well, also rocking up. You've become part of it. Or if you've done some other service, you made the outfit that Jagannath wears, well, then, of course, pretty good, or whatever service one does. So like this, when we begin to offer the fruits of our activities to Krishna, then gradually our interest begins to change from enjoying these fruits and not being attached to these fruits, so getting attached to doing something for Krishna. In this way, Bhagavad Gita gives us a process of gradual purification, but points out that pure devotional service is higher. Just to do anything for Krishna, whatever Krishna wants, all the time, our whole life, every moment, just dedicated to Krishna. And everything we just do for Krishna. Well, yes, it's okay, but still, like, we spoke of the mercy of Krishna, and part of it was that we got up from bed and brushed our teeth this morning, and brushing our teeth, okay, it's also devotional service. Right? It's even mentioned in scriptures. One should not neglect to brush his teeth. Amazing enough. Right? But, just see. But, still, that seems to be more taking care of ourselves. Because then, if I put that on my list, I can make a huge list of things that I need to do to take care of myself. And is that also then serving Krishna? Well, you know, then it's easy. Then I need a little relaxation for myself. I need a nice atmosphere. I need a house that is just a little bigger. I need a chair that is just a little more comfortable, just so that I'm fit for my service. Then, well, I need two cars. Because otherwise my mind is not peaceful. And what else do I need? I mean, then I can go on and on and on. I mean, so if you open the door for sort of doing things for your own well-being so that you can serve Krishna well, then where are the limits? There is no stereotype answer. That is the interesting part. That is something that everyone takes his own risk. Yes, you can have two cars if your mind needs two different colors in the week. Yes, you can. You can have three as well. Yes. You can have a whole garage full, right? Yeah. You can have many things. Yeah. Or clothes, right? Yes, you can have cupboards and cupboards, truckloads, right? Bring it in, yes. Why not? Shoes, unlimited shoes. One can have gadgets, right? Some electronics in every pocket. Like that, we can have. But the question is, if it's not very helpful in the service of Krishna, then why keep it? Some people have the philosophy, well, you know, we'll keep it because later we might need it, you know. You never know. It's always handy to have. Right? You know, the day may come, you know, that you will need it, and you'll be happy that we have it. And I know we've got it somewhere, and I think it's on shelf number 27, in the back corner. but let me just check the computer to make sure. So, of course, you can turn your whole house into a warehouse and have stocked everything you could possibly need in the material world, just in case. Just in case we need to use it for Krishna. But maybe that's a little bit exaggerated, because some things we can just leave it up to Krishna. We do not need to make hundreds and millions of arrangements. Krishna will also arrange for us. So if we really need it, somehow or other, it will come. It also will come. Not that we entirely wait like that, that we sit and just say, okay, well, will anything to eat come today? Although, we see that Madhavendra Puri did exactly that. He just said, I will only chant, because I can't waste my time with something like eating. Chanting is more important than eating, so I will chant. And, well, if the body needs to be maintained, then, you know, I hope that something to eat will come. But if not, then, well, you know, then we won't maintain the body. But I can't waste my time. I can't stop chanting. That's not possible, you know. He must have come to that point. If you sort of look at the earlier Madhavendra Puri, you could imagine that there would have been a point where he just got fed up with it, that he always had to do things that were interfering with his chanting. Always. Right? Always had to do something else than devotional service. Never could he just fully concentrate on devotional service, and he became so fed up with it that he said, well, I'm just not going to do anything else anymore. I'm only going to do devotional service now. And thus, he came to this point. I will only chant. And if anything to eat will come, then it will come. So it wasn't that, well, you know, I'm such a powerful devotee. Krishna will surely bring me my lunch. And by the way, I would like a 7-course lunch, please. With some fresh salad and some... You know, and he gives the menu to Krishna, and Krishna comes dressed as the waiter and says, here it is, my dear devotee. Not in that mood, but more in the mood of, I'm not going to be distracted from devotional service anymore, not for anything. No more compromise. Because life is always so full of compromise. If only we would have the time to do all the things we'd want to do in devotional service. If only we did not have all those other duties. If only, year in, year out, so many duties. Every day we think, oh, if only. Of course, then we are in Vrindavan, and then suddenly we have the time, and then we panic. Now I only have to chant. Help! Where's the internet? It doesn't work. Oh no, what will I do now? let me see. Well, I still have some... There's no electricity also, but I still have some battery power left. The last. Empty. Oh no. Oh, what to do next? Everything finished. Nothing to do. Oh no. Vrindavan. Then suddenly we have to just hear and chant all day. Just think of Krishna all day. Then we notice that actually our mind is quite attached to always having something else to do but serve Krishna. So we live a life where we are always compromised. And in one way we get a little attached to that compromise. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking that we cannot avoid compromise altogether, but we must at least do something true to our ideal. Right? Something. a little bit, right? You must a little bit, like have a high ideal and do something through to that ideal. Just that you, that we, like, just to have a little bit of satisfaction in the heart. Right? Otherwise, you know, you're already defeated before you really tried. You know, then you're defeated in life. So it's like, that's miserable. Right? But if you at least try for something ideal, well then, this, the hope is still alive, you know, yes. And you get new inspiration. So this is necessary. So something ideal, something where we go for pure devotional service, something that, that we believe in, yes, this is what I want to do for Krishna, and we must do it. Sometimes we have an idea and it's a long time in our head and we just don't do it. But maybe one day we will. I still have this idea that one day I'll go to Govardhan and I'll bring a huge, huge turban, and I'm going to dress up this enormous rock, not a small one, but I'm going to dress up this one rock really big and just put on this huge turban and big conch shell eyes and everything, and then do like a big puja to give it to this Giriraj like that. I have this idea for a long time, but it takes quite some organization, and it just didn't quite happen yet. But who knows, one day. I'm not the best pujari, but still I have this plan. So sometimes we have a plan, and it's there. And we must do something to realize some of our Krishna conscious desires. We must have some desires in relation to Krishna, to do something, some service. We must recognize these things, something we'd like to do for Krishna, and that we must do to get out of this compromised situation. Otherwise we get, otherwise compromise becomes the way of life. And then frustration becomes the normal state of consciousness. And what to do? And then we grow older. And then we die. Say, well, spiritual life was nice. But not that kind of overflowing ecstasy, right? Which is what we want. So, at least a little attempt I would like to propose to everyone. A little attempt to break out of the dry routine of compromise. Well, some thoughts. And but also a little low on energy, the three modes of material nature are sort of making me a little tired. So, why don't we have some questions, if there are, or comments? Because otherwise I... Embracing the mood of the spiritual master and the risk to imitate. Well, the scriptural point that is made, not anukar, but anusar. Anukar means imitate, And anusara means to follow, follow in the footsteps. I think embracing the mood of the spiritual master doesn't mean that we exactly try to get in the same frame of mind, you know, as our spiritual master, but that we hold in high esteem whatever he holds in high esteem. So whatever is important to our spiritual master becomes important to us. And as the servant of the spiritual master, we begin to pay attention to things that he has pointed out are important, that are important to him. And before, we never paid so much attention to these things. And in this way, our mood changes. Our mood becomes slowly like we begin to get some of his mood, because similar things that are important to him become now important to us. So in this way, it comes by serving and by holding in high esteem what is important to him. And then we automatically embrace the mood of the spiritual master without imitation. Because we are a different person, completely. And we cannot... We have a different nature. And it's also not right to follow someone else's nature. We all have a different rhythm. Some people need a little more sleep, some need a little less sleep, some eat more, some eat less, some eat fast, some eat slow, and so on. Some talk a lot, some talk a little, some need to really sit down a bit more than others, just to sort of just let things settle down. So I think we cannot deny that in our nature, and that may be different. So there is a difference between us and the spiritual master. But we have faith in our spiritual master, in that he is really dedicated in serving Krishna, and that he has brought down Krishna consciousness to real life. Because a spiritual master must do more than just repeat the books. A spiritual master must bring the transcendental knowledge to real dealings. It must translate into actually the activities of life. Then it is realized knowledge, otherwise it remains, in some extent, only book knowledge. So that's what we see, and that's made Srila Prabhupada such a wonderful personality, because he's so exalted, so otherworldly, a resident of the spiritual world, someone who is there, someone who is seeing Krishna whenever he wants, someone who has glimpses of the spiritual world and whatnot, right? And then at the same time, someone so very much there with the people that he was with, and someone very human and also very concerned with the human experiences that people had, and so on, and kind and considerate, but not going for any compromise. Somehow or other, coming down, working with with people who are so entangled, slowly, slowly bringing them up to the highest standard, never compromising his standard. Nice how he functions on all these levels. I mean, I really like that in him, and I'm thinking about that, right? So I'm looking at him then as my example, and I can't imitate that. Yeah, I can also try and keep my chin up. But people might be saying, he's so arrogant. He walks with his nose up in the air. Huh? Prabhupada walked with his chin upwards, but in my case it would be my nose up. So I won't try to imitate in that way. If we imitate, we always fall short. But if I try to, if we try to serve, then it can be done. So in this way, okay, I'm using now the example of Srila Prabhupada, of course. So in this way, I think when we embrace the mood of the spiritual master or spiritual masters, we are the one we are, but we are the servant. Just like Hanuman was a complete surrendered servant of Lord Ramachandra. But Lord Ramachandra was a prince and Hanuman was a monkey. So he could not be like Lord Ramachandra. He was a monkey. So, but his glory was service. So if by serving, and we embrace the mood of the spiritual master, but serving what is dear to the spiritual master. In regards to service, the Nectar of Devotion describes two types of service. It describes general service, and it describes service in the mood of a personal attendant. And it says that the mood of the personal attendant is higher. And it is obvious that a personal attendant is not just serving. A personal attendant is seeing, like, well, what is needed now. And if you're a general servant, well, what can we offer? We can offer milk, we can offer water, we can offer juice, all these things are offerable. General service, all accepted. Milk, water. Thank you very much. Personal attendant is looking, what is the need now? Yeah. All right, according to the condition, yeah. Make the offering. So the personal attendant is very sensitive to doing the needful. So a disciple who becomes like the personal attendant of the spiritual master becomes very much begins to serve the need of the spiritual master. Such a disciple becomes it becomes like an extension of the spiritual master, right? Then the spiritual master's influence in the world is increasing. If he has 1,000 of such disciples, then he has 1,000 wings by which he can fly. And in this way, the mercy of Krishna can spread throughout the world. Then, when a spiritual master has, even if he has one such disciple, he will be very pleased with such a disciple who is helping in the mission. Such a disciple may never ask so much, but always do. May ask also, but may not. But that disciple will be recognized. That will be the disciple that really embraces the mood of the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master's mood is ultimately, he works to bring Krishna's mercy to the whole world. What else has he got to do? Nothing else. Krishna, Krishna. Yes. Okay, she's asking that I was talking about keeping a balance between the material world and the spiritual world, and how can we keep a balance nowadays? It's a personal matter, a personal matter, because we have different natures, and we have to just, I guess we have to put some boundaries around ourselves. Yeah, and that is this, is somewhere, okay, there are four regulated principles. If we can follow those, that will be good. Yeah. And if we've come to the point where we follow them, then we should do what it takes to maintain them. So if we feel that our activities are weakening our strength in these principles, then we have to do something to adjust that. For example, I know for myself, it might not be good if I would live in a very mundane place, and I would have to be a sannyasi at the same time, and there would be no devotees at all. I would be living all alone in a street full of mundane people. After a while, it might get a little bit draining. I might start to feel drained. And if I carry on with that, I wouldn't want to try what would happen if I would do that. I just wouldn't do that. I wouldn't consider myself so powerful above the influence of Maya that I would place myself in such a position. So one must keep himself safe on the spiritual platform, safe from Maya. You feel when Maya is attacking. No one else can see it, right? A little bit maybe, but we cannot see in your heart, but we know what is in our heart. So we know, we know that being close to devotees helps. We know that coming to a temple helps. We know that, so if we can live a little closer to devotees, good, isn't it? It helps. So, in this way, if we can arrange our life in such a way that there are many positive factors in it that help for our Krishna consciousness, that's one thing on the Krishna side that helps. Now, what do we need on the material side? Okay, here's the list. Gets longer and longer. All right. Then see how much do you have to do to get all that. There may be many things on your list that require too much effort. Then that will take so much energy, that will take all your energy and time away from Krishna. Sorry, can't have them. Over-endeavor. No diamonds. Glass. Not glass, but glass. Sorry. Like that, you know, a few things may have to go off the list because it would just take too much to get them. But that which you can get with normal endeavor, without spending all your time, all right, you have that. Right? If it doesn't pull you in Maya. Yeah. So that we have to test. So one has to always watch it. There's no thing as that you have a permanent balance. You have to watch it. Something. I guess it's something like your health, you know. You have to sort of look after it a little bit, right? I mean, in the winter you don't just walk outside without putting on a coat. Not in the Swedish winter. That's not smart. Of course, some jumping in the ice after the sauna, but anyway. That's not for normal people. That's for polar bears and penguins. So anyway, you get my point, though. My point is that we have to ourselves look that how we are affected by Maya, how we are free from Maya, we try and get good spiritual influence in our life, we keep the material arrangements within reasonable means, so that we have time and energy left for Krishna. Then, Haribo, Namaste, Harishinga, Yatmala. Then you pray to Krishna on your knees, please protect me, help me, save me, pull me through this, help me to share my rounds. I'm helpless, I can't do anything alone. Somehow, protect me. Then you cross you off your fingers. Like that. For the sake of preaching,
yeah.
Take some risk for the sake of preaching.
Yeah.
For the sake of
for
take a risk for the sake of preaching. Preaching means somehow or other encouraging others in Krishna consciousness. That's okay. But it's got its limits. I've told the story that once in Australia we were on the book distribution marathon, and at the last evening, this devotee that I was out with said, actually we were doing paintings, that he said, I know one place that is still open. I said, let's do it. And they were the prostitutes, right? Since I had said, let's do it, I did it, right? And then we went in, so I rang the doorbell for the first time and the last time in my life, just to make it clear. And it was quite, flashing lights, the door opens, this girl comes with a purple blouse with a cut somewhere to the navel, silver hot pants on, and I go, oh no. And they come in, and she goes, hi, guys. We go in, there's a corridor, we follow her, there is a lounge, and there's a whole bunch of them. Hi, God. So anyway, I showed the painting, and I said, hi, would any of you be interested in paintings, by the way? We're showing them around tonight. Yeah. Oh, salesman, it seems that it happens more often. Yeah. Anyway, we did our thing with the paintings, and the system was that you would show people the paintings. If they liked one, I said, oh, I like this one, put it aside. Yeah, keep on. Oh, I like this one, put it aside. Yeah, go through all the whole stack there. And then in the end, you make the bill for the stack, and sometimes they would buy them all. Right. So then the girl said, we love them. Yeah, they're very nice. But we don't have any money. But we can work something out, guys. He said, no, the boss wants money.
No way.
Boss wants money. I said, well, okay then. Well, we can pay for it, but then you have to wait until for us to make the money. So that night the girls worked for us. I don't know if that was right, you know. Maybe we took a little too far. So there are limits. You decide where you put the limit, but there are limits. I never did that again. Anybody else?
And then I'm like,
Very good. Interesting. With Maasai warriors, huh? Yeah. Well. Yeah, but we have to be, we have to make up our mind, I'm going to do it. That's the first thing. So we have to meditate on it, I'm going to do it. Then, so the first thing is where to get determination and conviction to do it. The second part would be logistics of how to do it. So, first is motivation, right? Well, there are two types of motivation. There is negative motivation. What happens to me if I don't do it? Right? I might just waste my whole spiritual life because I'll become weaker and weaker and, you know, and from one thing, things might start to slip if I don't have this. So it's a matter of survival, spiritual survival. So it's in this way, we have to first contemplate the importance of why early mornings help. Now, okay, leaving that aside, because this is not the class, this is just the preview. The class is in Mayapur. They come to Mayapur. But the preview, a little introduction. So the first part is about motivation. And I'll leave it now. I'll go a little bit to logistics. And logistics, well, logistics are to do with how to do it, and also how not to do it. We cannot do more than is realistic. See, you cannot just suddenly decide, and from tomorrow I get up at 1 o'clock. Yeah? Then it's already quite late right now. It's 10 to 8. If you want to get up at 1, you're not going to get much sleep. You're going to be tired for Ratiyatra. So those who want to get up at 1 might already find it hard for tomorrow. It can still be done, but it's tough. Okay? So you have to see what's practical. We have to work. It's easy to get up really early. But if you have to be fit in at work also, so there has to be a balance also. So the logistics, you have to work it out, what is practical. Early, but not too early. Early enough to chant a decent number of rounds. See, it's like, it is a certain point where it says, well, you have to have a minimum number. Like me, for myself, if I chant at least 10 in the morning, then 6 I can manage without stress later in the day. If it's less than 10 in the morning, then there's going to be some stress in that day. Yeah. I know that now. Right? And then I might wind up chanting some rounds in a car or some rounds in a plane or somewhere, which is very undesirable. Right? These are not the best rounds. But sometimes life is such that it does happen. You know, what can I do? It's like, you get tired, you get sick, you get this, you get that, you're busy, you have millions of things to do. So we have to balance all the whole thing. So it's not all about just getting up early. If it was as easy as that, it's not. It fits in a whole life, a life with busyness, a life with demands, and so on. So, but somewhere I set my minimum number. I said, that I'm going to do in the morning. That means I have to get up at this and this time. Okay, that means next that I have to be in bed by this and this time. Yeah? And since I sleep 9 hours every night, you know, you know, to get up at 6, okay, just then have to go be in bed by 9 o'clock. Actually, quick, you're still thinking. No, but within reason. Some people sleep 7 hours, some sleep 5, some sleep even 8, right? Anyone after 8, try and break it up. Although if health is very bad, then sometimes people may sleep more. But all these things we have to calculate according to our personal needs. Not imitation. I mean, you know how you feel after 7 hours sleep or after 6 hours sleep. I don't know. Right. I'm okay after 6 hours. I'm ready for the world. Right? Even 5.5, let's go. But 4, I can do it, but it gets to the point where I get a little irritable. Right? So, Don't cross me on a day like that, okay? Anyway, this is the gist of this is the summary, right? But it gives an idea. Well, you can get alarm clocks, and nowadays you can get devices that give you any sound you like, right? Just like you can personalize your alarm clock. So it can start with music, and if that doesn't work, it can start with crying. You could try a crying baby. Yeah. You can have a baby as well, but that's another thing. But, you know, there are certain sounds, right? I don't think anyone can sleep through the sound of a crying baby. I don't think it's possible. So if you have a problem with waking up, try. Put it on the other side of the room. You've tried it? Then you get up and you switch it off and go back to bed. Yeah. No, I think somewhere along the line you have to mature. Yeah, we have to mature, and you have to say, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to make sure that in bed early enough so that I'm not so tired in the morning that it's such a struggle to get up. I mean, I guess somewhere we have to say, I will just do it. Yeah. I guess that's a decision to make. Okay, now I am tired. Okay, well, I can do a quick table tennis answer. Yes. Anybody, table tennis answer, you get it. Okay, table tennis question, table tennis answer. Hare Krishna. 3 months of the nature overwhelm. Preach the Bhagavad Gita everywhere. Yeah, but we are devotees, so when you are devotees, then we can remember the Bhagavad Gita. That's our good fortune. We don't become that overwhelmed. So this is for the devotees. For the non-devotees, they don't know about Bhagavad Gita. But devotees are also overwhelmed by the lower modes sometimes. Then we have Gita. Arjuna was overwhelmed by the lower modes. Krishna said, this is not befitting a man of knowledge. Remember? That means you are acting now into the lower modes. Yes. Loud. Yes, of course, that's why I'm here. Rati Yatra Kidai. Hare Krishna. The saint is a person who is always trying to get his life in service of Krishna and in service of everyone else, trying to connect them with Krishna without taking any credit for himself. At all. Half a saint. He worships Krishna, tries to give Krishna to others, doesn't take any credit, always gives all credit to others. That's a saint. Anyone else might be inclined to take a little credit on the way. Sometimes cut a few corners serving Krishna. That's not yet a saint. I think I should have a good rest tonight for the Ratiyatra. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Kijaya.